Hello and welcome to the Docker for .NET Developer Series. My name is Dan Fernandez. I'm a program manager on the Azure Tools team. This is a series of videos designed to show you how you can use ASP.NET 5, Visual Studio 2015, and Linux virtual machines in Azure to deploy applications. So let's just talk about the video series overall. The first video, we're going to go into an overview of what Docker is and kind of demystify Docker and what you need to know as an ASP.NET developer. Second, we're actually going to go to the whiteboard and talk about kind of like the how a build becomes a law. This is the how an ASP.NET app goes from Visual Studio into a running container in Azure. We're actually going to show you how you can use our tools next in Visual Studio using Visual Studio Tools for Docker, a free extension for Visual Studio 2015 that you'll be able to download by the time this video is available. Next, we'll go through how you can actually do everything that you did in Visual Studio directly from the command line using PowerShell or MS Build. Next, in the fifth video, we're going to talk about Dockerfile basics. Dockerfiles are the recipes, if you will, for how you create and design your containers. We'll talk about how you can actually use those in a console application and actually show you building the console application that uses the Dockerfile from video number 5. Next, we're going to show building a multi-container app. So how do I do things like linking two containers so that they can talk to each other running on the same virtual machine? Now, even though we're doing 7 videos right now, there's going to be more to come, including things like orchestration and Windows containers over the next coming months. So let's get started with our first video, which is Docker overview. So probably the first couple of questions are things like why Docker, common questions, and what are we, Microsoft, doing with our Docker partnership? So why Docker? Probably one of the key reasons is the biggest lie in IT, which is it works on my machine, right? What you want to do as a developer is have something work on your machine and then have the exact same state, that desired state that you want, work across different environments, meaning an application goes from development to test to staging to production. Right? How do you have that work? That's called production realism, meaning I set up my environment exactly like I like it in development, but maybe it's different in production. Maybe a connection string, maybe a file folder doesn't exist where we're saving logs and there's some error and the application doesn't work. This is a real problem across everybody in IT where they have to make changes to environments, and if those aren't scripted, well now if I ever need to delete that environment, I'm going to lose that change, that modification that made the application work. And what containers give you is the ability to have everything defined in that environment, and then you're basically moving and creating new instances of that container. And it really is about portability and agility. So let's talk about a little bit about why it's even called containers. So you can think about the container metaphor like shipping containers. So you can imagine, say, you're shipping things like food, cars, electronics, whatever it happens to be. Before standardized containers, this was really hard. You could imagine, you know, like a bag of fruit needs to be handled a different way than, say, orange juice, which needs to be handled differently than, say, a car. And what happened was they standardized, the entire industry standardized across a way to ship things. So this became a shipping container, and they standardized every part of that shipping container, making it very easy where you don't care about what's in the container. You are just gold with moving that over. And the same metaphor applies for software, meaning you, the developer, are going to decide what goes into that container, like your app, like your settings, like your config, and then somebody else is going to create instances of that container across those different environments. And the whole idea is going back to how do we have that production realism. Everything is defined in that container. I can easily create it, and of course, it is portable. So just recapping some of the things that we've talked about, you know, this is the biggest thing is not only do developers like it, but operations team like it as well, right? Because this is abstracting differences from an operations perspective. It's abstracting the differences in operating system distribution. So you can imagine, do I want to build or retest my application on different flavors of Linux? For example, Debian versus Ubuntu versus CoreOS versus CentOS and so on. No, what I really want to do is have that container, that definition of that container, and be able to easily recreate those. And that's that write once, run anywhere power. So let's take a step and think about what a container actually is. It's a unit of deployment. So if I'm a .NET developer today, say I'm using ASP.NET, I may have some kind of infrastructure that looks like this. Maybe there's some sort of front-end proxy. You can imagine those middle tiers. They could be web apps or web APIs or some combination of those that load balances across those. And then some sort of, maybe it's a relational backend or something like a Redis as a backend database that's replicating data, and it's available in a high availability state. Well, what a unit of deployment is basically, what are the things that I need for that front end? Maybe I'm using Nginx, an open source tool, to do the proxying for me in that very first front end. Those middle ones could be either parts of my different application or the same application replicated within, so I'm sharing state and sharing load across them. And that backend, of course, could be Redis, and maybe it's sharing, there's a master slave set up with Redis to be able to share that data. Now, the key thing is all of these containers run on a virtual machine or bare metal. They run on a host OS. So I can't just create a container. The real value in a container is abstracts out everything to just the bare things that I need to run my application. So instead of, for example, if I spin up a virtual machine, say a Windows virtual machine, you get absolutely everything. Even with a server core, you get a bunch of different features that are turned on and processes and so on that maybe you don't need. What a container does is rather than start with everything, let's start with practically nothing and then just add our application. So rather than start with everything and then reduce, it's start with nothing and then add, if you will. So, and remember the labels here, and let's just show this is an example of the deployment. We could actually have multiple containers running on the same virtual machine. In this example, our front end proxy, all of our middle tier, and even one of our databases are all running on one VM called the front end VM. You can decide how to distribute these as well, and then there's another virtual machine. And the point is, multiple containers can run on one virtual machine. It actually increases density, meaning you can have more things running and more applications running without having the whole overhead of spinning up another virtual machine. Now, there are a number of things for orchestration tools and things like Docker Swarm that actually make it smarter for when you're creating a container to choose which virtual machine to host them on. But just real simple, the thing to take away is the container is the unit of deployment. So you can imagine, this is an ASP.NET app, this is an ASP.NET app, this is an ASP.NET app. It could be the same application, or the application could be factored using microservices, and they could all, of course, talk to each other as well. So that's the unit of deployment. Everything is running on a virtual machine or bare metal, and we're virtualizing the operating system. So rather than having everything start up, we're reusing parts of the operating system that we need, like FileIO or network. And the point here is it has very fast startup. So to create a container, once you're running from a cache, and we'll talk about how the copy-on-write semantics for how these are actually built, but these are really fast to create a container once you have the base image. And again, these are super portable. So if I need to move them from my on-prem servers to the cloud or distribute partially within the cloud, it's incredibly easy to do that. It's not going to spend the week setting up these different infrastructures. It's literally just a couple of lines from the command line. Okay, so we kind of get that unit of deployment for a container. But how do I actually build a container? Well, the first thing is you have what's called an image. And an image is, maybe to use the class and object metaphor, if you had a .NET class, let's say an animal, that is a definition of a class. And then an object would be, say, a dog, a cat, a monkey. Those are three different implementations or instances that I'm creating of that. A Docker file allows you to build the image, meaning the definition, the class, if you will, and then containers are the running instances of that. So to create these Docker files, or to create these images, you use a Docker file. So basically, what are the things that I need to put in my application? And it also does a lot of smart things for you, meaning it takes a snapshot of every command and uses caching to improve performance. So that way, when you actually go to create an image or create a container based on an image, It looks, do I have this in my cache? I've already built this. I don't need to recreate it. And it can be much smarter. So something that maybe took minutes the first time can take fractions of a minute. So let's talk about this very, very quickly. And we'll go through this in much more detail in the Dockerfile basics. But we have something called from, which gives us the definition of another Dockerfile or another image from the Docker Hub. And a Docker Hub is this repository of images that you can either build your own or use the community ones. So for example, there's an official ASP.NET one, and we're saying start from that one. If you go look at the Dockerfile for that one actually is from Debian. And it uses, it's from Mono, and then the Mono one uses Debian. So there's this sort of cascading definition or hierarchy of parents, if you will, from starting with that Debian operating system, then to Mono, then to ASP.NET. So we basically say, get ASP.NET, and what I want to do is add, and what I'm going to do is, this is sort of, the dot says basically include everything from where this Docker file was run, the root folder from where we actually did the Docker build, and push it into a folder called app, set the working directory, and here we're actually doing some templating for the project name, and then set up an entry point that is going to run Kestrel, which is our open source. You can imagine it like an easy way to describe it would be like IIS, but portable, like a very simple web server. We run DNX and tell it to use Kestrel, and then point to localhost to a specific port. So things to take away here are Docker files let you build images, and images are what you use to create a container. And a Dockerfile is nothing more than a recipe to create these images. So let's get into some of the common questions and common misconceptions. And once we start the whiteboarding session, I think this will also come in, so you'll be able to understand exactly what happens here. So a Docker client versus a host. So what we're talking about when we say the term a Docker client, we really mean a command line interface where there's, you know, Docker, I run, open a command line and type the word Docker and have commands to say, list the running containers, create a new container, create a new image, and so on. The Docker host, that's what's actually running Docker. So it's a client-server model, meaning I have a Docker client in the command line, and it is sending messages or commands to that server that's listening. It spawns up a daemon, and there's a REST API as well if you want to, for example, use it in your own applications. And there's even a .NET library that calls the REST API as well. So the key point is there's a Docker client that would say be my laptop, and then a Docker host, and that would say be an Azure VM in Linux that has the Docker daemon all set up and running for me. Now, Docker, Linux, and Windows host. This is another question, which is, can I run Windows containers on Linux? Or can I run Linux containers on Windows? And the answer is no. You can only create the same container as the underlying host VM. Now, if your applications are portable, meaning imagine whether it's ASP.NET 5 or Node, and you build it in a way that ensures portability, then yes, you know, that Node app, you can have a Node container with your app or an ASP.NET app and have the same application because the code and all the dependencies are described be portable across those. But if you're doing something that's specific to Linux, let's say one of the Linux Docker images and you want to create a container, you cannot use that Linux image for Redis, for example, on Windows. It is built for Linux, and therefore it obviously virtualizes things in Linux, and basically a Linux host requires Linux containers. So this Docker image versus container, and we've talked about this, remember, the image is the definition, the recipe, and it's literally just a single file, if you will, if you think about that. And then a container, which is an instance of that image, and you can create multiple instances of that exact website. And now this thing called the Docker Hub, and it's a collection of reusable images. So there's 50,000 plus. You know, if you wanted to spin up new software or try out new software, it's a great way, rather than you having to create a new virtual machine, set up that virtual machine, install all the software. They've got it pre-installed software for you. It makes it really easy. This is maybe the best example is to think about it like an app store for iOS, Android, or Windows. This is the app store for a Docker. Meaning it gives me a set of reusable images that I can use. And I can, of course, have my own private Docker Hub if I want to. I can run that locally, or they have private images on the public one, so you can sign up for a private repository. And you would do that, say, if you wanted to have a private store for just your enterprise's applications. And you can, of course, if you don't want to use the official Docker one, it is open source, and build your own as well. So what about .NET developers? What can I actually do? So .NET developers are going to use ASP.NET 5, and you can use ASP.NET console apps, which we'll show. And you can either use the runtime environment of .NET Core or Mono. So for right now, when this video ships, Mono is obviously the more feature-rich implementation for Linux, but .NET Core is catching up and doing regular deliveries, and I certainly expect .NET Core to be the default choice going forward for developers. But one of the key things that you can't do, of course, is things like WPF or any sort of GUI application for Windows containers for sure, or for Linux, because again, the requirement is that these are server-based. And also, you can't use .NET 4.6 because .NET 4.6 requires the full framework, and the full framework, of course, is only on Windows. So .NET Core or Mono. So we talked about Windows, but there's actually a separation, two kinds or categories of containers for Windows. Windows Server containers and Hyper-V containers. So you can see the image here. We have the Windows Server kernel, and all within Windows, we have two kinds, a Windows Server container and a Hyper-V container. And the key difference, the key thing to take away here, is Windows Server containers, you can do more, have more density, meaning there's less overhead, so you can spin up more of them, but it has less isolation. So what Hyper-Vs give you is more isolation, meaning you see that boundary around this Hyper-V container. It allows for more isolation, more security. And the classic example would be if you're doing something where it's a hostile neighbor. In other words, if I'm running containers and I don't know who is running, I'm on container A, there's a hostile neighbor in container B, that's a great scenario for where you'd want to use Hyper-V containers. Now, if you own the entire Windows Server, or the virtual machine or bare metal that's running Windows Server containers, that isn't really an issue, right? Because you own the entire virtual machine, you can do whatever you want with it. You don't have that hostile neighbor. So it really is a decision point on do you want more density and less isolation, or do you want more isolation and less density? And the key thing to also take away is the Docker client, meaning the Docker engine on the and the Docker daemon, the exact same way that it works for Linux, works on Windows. So I still just send commands from my laptop to the Docker daemon to do things like build a container, run a container, and it will just work. Now, here's probably one of the most tricky parts about thinking about how things are different. And I have a next slide that I'll walk through. But deployments replace instead of update. So let's go through kind of maybe how you're doing things today. But you can imagine, say you're using an Azure website, you're using Web Deploy, maybe it's on a virtual machine, maybe it's on the Azure app service. And what you do is you use Web Deploy, and what that does is you spin up that environment, and then I'm just updating code directly in that environment. I'm throwing new code on there, throwing new code on there. If I needed to, for example, in a virtual machine, maybe the first time I built that virtual machine, I set it up, I built the folders and everything else, I ran some long-running service, etc. I did that once, and now I'm actually updating that virtual machine. So with Docker, though, what we really get into is immutable infrastructure, meaning you're never updating a container. What you're doing is replacing that running container and basically building a new one. So I have the old definition of the container. I make changes here, and then the old container dies and I replace it with the new one. So I'm always replacing rather than actually changing the one in production. So that's a key thing to keep in mind. And a lot of people call it kind of immutable infrastructure. Just like in .NET, there's immutable strings where it actually, if you try and make a change to a string, creates a new string. That's kind of the idea. And one of the things that people get tripped up on when you start talking about containers. So let's actually show this in action. So a developer on the left side builds and tests apps in a container, say from Visual Studio. And what they're going to do is one option, obviously, when you're dev and testing, you can deploy directly to a Linux virtual machine. What you can do, though, in more of a real-world scenario is rather than the developer being in charge of getting production up and running, what we do is we push to that central repository, say a Docker Hub or a private version of Docker Hub, and all my definitions of my images are in there. Now, what Ops is going to do is, great, I now have the definitions, I know which containers need to be created, and there's a number of things for orchestration and clustering that make this easier to define things like dependencies within these. But the Ops team is the one that's going to basically run some script or automated process that takes those containers and creates them in production. So obviously the metrics go through. We imagine new things happen to get deployed. Those new, the developer pushes them to the containers. The containers are replaced, meaning we kill the old ones and then replace them with new ones versus making changes. And that's one of the things when you talk about production realism, rather than doing these changes ad hoc, it's really, really easy to be able to make these portable. Okay, so one of the key things is kind of what is Microsoft doing and how does this all fit in to the grand scheme? So first off is development environments. We'll have support for Visual Studio and certainly there's other ones for Azure. If you can imagine a Java developer would feel very comfortable in say Eclipse. You can choose whatever development environment that you want. And then you can choose however you want to use container management. So maybe it's just using PowerShell, which we'll show today. And there's orchestration and clustering technologies like Docker Swarm or Docker Compose that allow you to manage those containers, define dependencies, and so on. And then obviously there's a number of others, including Mesos and Kubernetes as two popular options to do those. And the point is, for Azure, we are not saying this is the way you need to do things. We're saying we provide options and choice for customers to choose whatever container management technology makes sense for them. You can, of course, use either Windows or Linux, as we've talked about. And then another key thing is it could, of course, be on-premise or Azure or via another service provider, meaning how is Windows Server enabling other people to run their own cloud and maybe a SaaS provider as well. Now that we've talked about all the different options for containers, what we're going to do is show you how you can Dockerize an ASP.NET application and actually build it in a Linux virtual machine.